I think as an entrepreneur, sometimes you just have this conviction about something even though you don't have all the data available. I think that's what makes entrepreneurs become entrepreneurs. You know, like even though we don't know all parts of the things, but we just have this conviction that we're going to get there.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and the truths they uncover along the way. The term plant-based often conjures up thoughts of tasteless tofu, mystery non-meat meats, and endless leafy greens. But this week's founder truly changed the game when it comes to ready veggie meals. Serving up tasty pad thais, peanut sauce gados, rendang and satay as frozen ready meals, Helga Angelina Chajadi of Burr Greens and Green Rebel took her restaurant business and pivoted into a global plant-based food brand with partnerships with Starbucks, Domino's, and IKEA. In this week's episode, Helga shares with us how she's making plant-based meals easy and tasty, why she once went viral on social media, and the time her business only had a one-week runway left. Here's our conversation. Hi Helga, welcome to Crazy Smart Asia. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Xiaowei. How are you?
I'm good. So we're going to kick off with a round of quick-fire questions as we do with all episodes. How would you describe what you do in one sentence?
I make healthy and green foods taste really good.
Okay. What is your mantra in life?
Everything we do has an impact and we need to choose what kind of impact that we want to make.
Oh, I like that. So you're passionate about animal welfare, right? What's your favorite animal?
I think dogs. I have four kids at home.
You have four kids. Is this including your one-year-old toddler?
No, that's excluding. So I have one human baby and four fur kids. So I have five in total.
Okay. And the plant-based food or dish that you can eat every single day?
I'd say gado-gado, which is an Indonesian salad with peanut sauce and tempeh.
I like that. We have it in Singapore as well. It's my parents' favorite to eat.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's I think I can eat that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Every day, yeah.
So you were born and raised in Indonesia, but I understand that you later actually moved to the Netherlands for college, right? Why the Netherlands of all places? What city were you in?
Yes. So why Netherlands? I think I always wanted to go to Europe. So my father used to live in Germany for 10 years. That's how I got my name, Helga. Helga isn't really an Indonesian name, okay? Like, it's a German name and it's a name that is used by the grandma's generation of, like, our grandma's generation. Nobody in our age is called Helga anymore in Germany. But okay. Yeah, like, my father used to live there. He had a neighbor, and that sweet little neighbor was called Helga. That's how I got my name. But anyway, I always wanted to go to Europe. Germany was my first, I guess, choice. But then I learned that you have to speak German to be able to study and live there. And so after I did a little bit of research, I think in the Netherlands, you can get away with speaking English. Education is good. And there is a lot of Indonesian food. To be very honest, I don't think I can survive living in Europe if I don't eat Indonesian food. And in the Netherlands, given the history, you know, like, Indonesian food is everywhere.
And you also met your co-founder and your later husband, Max, there.
Yes, I did there. Yeah, we went to the same college.
Oh, and he's also Indonesian, right?
He's also Indonesian, yeah.
So maybe tell me a little bit more about how your childhood was like, because you were born and raised in Indonesia. What was that like?
Honestly, my childhood was a lot about hustling and battling with several health issues. So ever since I was a baby, I had like multiple chronic health issues. So I had asthma, eczema, sinusitis. It was all related to like for gut health, but at that time, I think the science wasn't catching up. So my mom didn't know what it was. Yeah. And my mom is a medical doctor, by the way. Mm. So yeah, basically, I had those issues. I had so many food allergies. I was even allergic to dust and cold weather. Wow. So yeah, it was pretty bad actually. So I was always like having this, a small container of medicines every time I went. But that's also how I kind of got into the industry where I am today. So when I was 15, I decided to basically become vegetarian after reading a few books on nutrition. And 2 years later, my health issues disappeared. So that's how I became really passionate about the industry where I am today, like plant-based nutrition and plant-based food.
Ah, was your family also predominantly having a plant-based diet?
Yes, now yes, but before no. Like my mom was like just a conventional eater, but somehow I also like, it's funny, I also just now realized that she used to make spinach chips, which is plant-based, but her diet wasn't necessarily plant-based at the time.
Okay. And then you went to Netherlands, you met Max, and you said that you were already vegetarian by then, right? And you managed to convert Max to become a vegetarian when you guys started dating.
I didn't convert him. He became vegetarian, not because of me, to be very honest. I mean, he started cooking vegetarian food for me, but then he decided to become a vegetarian after he learned more about the environmental impact of, eating plant-based meals in comparison to meat. Based dishes. He used to be the biggest meat eater. He used to have like at least 3 types of animal protein every time he ate. It's a surprise for me and to his family and to his friends that he could actually decide to become vegetarian than vegan.
Yeah, so it was quite a big change for him in terms of lifestyle. But he made the active choice after getting more informed with what was happening in the world and how the meat industry was impacting the environment.
Correct. And he lost 12 kgs at the time. He lost like 12 kgs in 3 months. He felt very energetic. He was always very active. So like he practiced kung fu and basketball. And he could feel that his endurance really went up when he just shifted his diet to plant-based. So I guess that was what convinced him to like just go overnight to fully go plant-based.
Yeah. And what about you? Was it an overnight change or was it like a gradual change from a relatively heavy meat diet to a plant-based diet?
I was never a big meat eater. I mean, like meat, egg and chicken is like used to be part of my family's diet, right? But it's not the only thing we ate. Like we ate vegetables, tempeh and tofu, etc. So it's pretty balanced diet. But I did change it gradually. So I think I started becoming a pescatarian for like 3 months. And then after 3 months, I felt so much better and I felt it was pretty easy. So then I just, gradually shifted to become vegetarian. And like 10 years later, I think Max and I became fully plant-based or vegan.
Yeah.
After we learned more about the environmental aspect of it.
Okay. And so we like to talk about aha moments on Crazy Smart Asia. The moment that really changed everything and set our guests on the path they are on today. What was your and Max's aha moment?
We weren't happy with what we were doing when we were in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we both work like a full-time job. I used to work in a digital marketing agency and Max used to work in a company as a data analyst. But we wanted to do something that is aligned with our passion and also contribute. And for us, contribution means like we can promote something that is good for people's health and the environment. Max has always been a great cook, right? So we used to live in this house with like 7 other Indonesians. And then he would be the one cooking for everybody. And as he transitioned his diet to become plant-based, he cooked vegetarian meals for his people. And they were like, oh my God, this is so awesome, super delicious. If vegetarian meals taste like this, I could become vegetarian. I think that's really the aha moment for us. Hey, people actually don't mind eating vegetarian meals if it tastes good, if it's fulfilling, if it's exciting. So I think that's how we were, we had the courage to basically leave our job and permanent residence in the Netherlands to go back to Indonesia and open our very first business, which was a plant-based restaurant called Bare Greens. Mm. And this was 10 years ago, okay? So like the industry was non-existent at the time.
What was your favorite dish from Max that he cooked during your time in the Netherlands?
It was vegan pad thai with tofu and vegetables. And then chapchai. I don't know if you know that dish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think those two were my favorite at the time.
Okay. So the both of you came back to Indonesia to start Burgreens in 2013. And what was that like? What was that experience? Because you said that the market wasn't mature yet. People didn't really know what plant-based foods meant or didn't have a restaurant that was plant-based.
I guess for people who are not familiar with Burgreens, Burgreens is a plant-based restaurant chain that is one of the first to combine Western and Asian food. So we started with, you know, things like veggie burgers, mushroom steak, pasta, smoothies, all those things. But also we combine it with Indonesian delicacies like rendang, satay, etc. So I think that localization concept of plant-based was pretty exciting for Indonesian consumers. Yeah. Because what we really like is not so much about meat, but it's about the flavors that goes with the meat dishes that we have in Indonesia. You know, when you talk about when you think about rendang, yeah, it's the rich spices that makes you want to eat more, right?
Yes. I'm already hungry. So, I love rendang.
Yeah, it's really good. And so that's how we started. To be very honest, the first 2 years, it was a lot of hard work, okay? Like we have very limited budget to begin with.
Yeah.
So we had no marketing budget. It was like Max and I were actually in the restaurant. Max was the one cooking in the kitchen. I was the one serving the guests. So we started the business really small. But it actually got better than what we expected because there was this niche group of people who were longing for healthy food and plant-based meals. And they were super excited to have Burgreens open. And they were the ones who basically, they were the evangelists, you know, like they brought their family, they brought their friends, they shared on social media about Burgreens. And that's how we kind of went viral without doing so much marketing at the time. We grew organically. So I think the first 2-3 years, it was a lot of hard work, but it was exciting as well because we get to meet the guests ourselves and we get to get their feedback. And we really were able to adjust our products to really get the right product to market fit.
Yeah.
Because we started with like the Western selections with a little of Indonesian food, but then we realized, oh, Indonesian consumers love Indonesian food that are created in the format of plant-based.
Okay. And was it all bootstrapped from the beginning? Did you get any external investments, whether is it from friends or family or even private investors?
We bootstrapped for the first 3 years. In fact, I wouldn't recommend this to any other person, but we pretty much use almost all of our savings to start Burgreens. And we just had to make it work, you know. But then in the third year, we got approached by a few angel investors who started as guests. Like they were dining in Burgreens. They liked the concept. And then they approached us saying that, hey, you know, why don't you open this in a mall or in a more commercial location? Because when we started our restaurant, the first two locations were actually in a neighborhood that is pretty further away from the center of Jakarta.
Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, so your guests actually became investors.
That's right, yeah. Our angel investors. When we evolved into Green Rebel, an Asian-flavored plant-based meat and dairy company, there's a spin-off of Burgreens. We started that company during COVID because obviously, you know, like during COVID, restaurant business was heavily impacted. But for Green Rebel, we work with venture capitals and impact investors.
Yeah, which is crazy, right? Because you started a business during the pandemic. Not many people would have thought to do so because it was a very high risk, right? And very uncertain time. So maybe we can talk a bit about Green Rebel in a bit. But I also want to focus a little bit more about Burgreens. So what was a day in a life like for you in the first year?
My day. Okay, I think we would wake up at around like 6 a.m. Having breakfast. And then we would go to the restaurant. We would already arrive at like 7:30. We typically open the restaurant at 9. And then we would do the preparation. And then we open the restaurant or the store at 9 until 9 p.m. Or 10 p.m. if there are still guest dining. Max and I were in the floor, right? Yeah. Because I was serving the guests. And Max was the one in the kitchen. Obviously, we started growing the team, the operational team, as we opened for a few months, and then we actually saw, oh, there was a pretty good reception. And then we return back to our home, and then we will prepare the protein, the sauces, the desserts that we needed to pre-prepare before it goes to the store.
Yeah.
So it will be like a central kitchen, but the central kitchen was in Max's garage actually.
Oh no.
So that was, I know, that was our first, pretty much our first 1 year. That's how it was.
And how many hours of sleep did you get in your first year?
Not enough. Not enough. I think we would probably sleep like 12 to 5 or 6, I think, like 5 to 6 hours every day.
Yeah.
And then we work seven days a week at the time also.
Yeah, but also I think when it comes to Burgreens, right, so earlier you said that the Indonesian audience actually really likes Indonesian flavors, which is why you guys decided to incorporate that into your business, into Burgreens menu. But actually plant-based meat is not exactly a new concept to Indonesians, right?
I think plant-based meat is pretty new, but plant-based protein isn't. Mm. So Indonesians' diet, like the traditional diet, is pretty much a flexitarian or a semi-vegetarian diet.
Right.
So like eating tempeh and tofu and not eating meat in every dish is part of our culture. But then as we go richer as a country, then our diet has become more westernized. And that's when a lot more urban consumers in Indonesia are eating animal protein every day in every single meal,
yeah.
You know? But yeah, actually the concept of eating plant-based meals isn't foreign at all. But the idea of eating plant-based meat that tastes like meat and that cooks like meat is pretty new. It's I think we were one of the first players that kind of introduced it. And you know, like there was a lot of positive reception, but it was a lot of education to the consumers as well.
Yeah. And how is it now? What's the reception like now?
Right now, the reception has been pretty positive. I mean, Burgreens itself as a restaurant, we have about 9 outlets in Jakarta and Bali and doing pretty well. But I think the way the market adopts plant-based meals, we can see it from Green Rebel, right? So Green Rebel partners up with a lot of restaurants to serve plant-based meals. Using our meat and dairy alternative. Mm-hmm. And so at the moment, we're in about 1,200 distribution points in Indonesia, including brands like IKEA, Starbucks, AirAsia, Tuli Jour, and in pretty much like all the, you know, like premium supermarket or like upper, like mass premium supermarket chains.
Yeah.
And yeah, the pickup is pretty good. The recurring purchase of consumers is pretty good. Every time we do sampling in store, people who have never heard of plant-based meat, but once they try, they love it, you know? So, like generally it's pretty good.
Mm, why do you think they love it so much? What do you think is the formula that you got right?
The way we position our brand is we make healthy convenience meals that happen to be plant-based. Mm. So when we do rendang, when we make rendang, the rendang has to taste good. And then the fact that it's plant-based is just a bonus for the consumer, you know? So then, like ideally, we want to capture them with flavor and texture.
Yeah.
And then once they like it, then they will find out later, oh, it's plant-based, so it's healthy for me, it's healthy for the environment. That all became a plus point. But first, they need to like the product, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the kind of innovation philosophy that we strive for. Like people, like we need to create really great products that people enjoy, whether or not they were intentionally wanting to eat plant-based meat.
Mm, okay, understand. So just now we mentioned that you started Green Rebel in 2020 while the world was battling a pandemic. Why did you think it was a good idea to start a new business at the height of the pandemic?
I think we didn't have any other choice, Shoei, to be very honest. So at that time, you know, like all the way to 2019, Burgreens had like 10 outlets, right? Mm. And we had 200 employees with us. And it was all good because the business has been profitable and everything. But then when COVID hit Indonesia in March, we had to close more than half of our stores because it was they were all located in the malls.
Yeah.
And, you know, like people weren't dining in the restaurants, if you remember those times, like those dark times, right? So our revenue dropped by 80%. It was really bad. Like it was shocking. We were in a cash crunch situation, and we just had to think creatively about how we would still be able to serve our customers and distribute our products. And then we came up with this idea to turn some of our best-selling protein, such as rendang, katsu, and satay, into frozen food. We packed it like super simple, vacuum packed with a sticker.
Yeah,
we sold it online 100%. And the reception was really, really good, actually. Like, we didn't expect that. Reception was really good. And then we got a call from Starbucks saying that, hey, they wanted to launch a plant-based menu at the time. They were the first multinational chain to do so in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And the management has been our guest for quite some years. And they say, you know, like, can we use your protein? And we're like, absolutely, you know, we'd love to collaborate with Starbucks. So, like, that was the start of Green Rebel, and we felt like it was the proof of concept that actually there is a market for, you know, plant-based meat. Yeah. In particular, if we can supply or empower other F&B chains that are a lot larger than Bare Greens to make plant-based meals more accessible to a wider audience in Indonesia.
Yeah.
We started raising our seed round at the time, open our pilot facility, and like a few months later, we launched Green Rebel.
And when did you first launch your facility?
We launched our facility in Q1 2021.
Ah,
okay. So we decided to, so it was like 1 year after we piloted the Green Rebel concept.
Yeah.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So what was the biggest, I guess, thing that kind of kept you up at night, right? When you saw that your sales fell by 80%?
At that time, right? I mean, I sleep pretty well now.
I'm glad to hear that.
At that time?
Yeah, at that time.
At that time, cash. I mean, we were such in a big cash crunch. I think at some point we weren't sure if we were able to pay the salaries of 200 employees at the time, you know. So it definitely was the one that kept, like, you know, cash security.
Yeah. So after Starbucks, you actually got calls from IKEA as well as Domino's. Do you think it was the Starbucks effect? So they saw you working with Starbucks and they noticed your brand?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think that had a big that was a big aspect to it. I mean, it wasn't only about Starbucks, right? It was about Starbucks, and it was a successful launch.
Mm.
So when we started working with Starbucks back in 2021, I think they launched in February 2021. So like they were literally our first F&B client. And they originally wanted to pilot the three meatless meals, sandwiches, in 50 stores in Jabodetabek, in Greater Jakarta and Bali.
Wow.
And then the reception was super well, so that in 1 month later, they rolled the three meatless pastries into 400 outlets of Starbucks nationwide.
Wow.
And then one out of the three became consistently one of the top 10 best-selling items. So they made it into corporate core menu or permanent menu. So I think that the fact that it was successful then made, you know, like other brands started to want to be part of the story, right? Because I think with plant-based innovation, it's not only exciting because you will be able to tap into a new customer segment, and you will be able to re-excite your customers who probably are now more health conscious or eco-conscious, but also the fact that it gives any company a good PR, you know, like people think about your brand as being a brand that cares about the environment when you launch plant-based innovation. So I think that was also, you know, like one of the reasons why other brands were excited to launch plant-based menus.
Okay, and I really need to talk about your orangutan mascot. Why did you choose the orangutan to front Green Rebel?
Thank you so much for noticing that it's orangutan rather than monkey, because I got some people asking me, why do you have a monkey as your mascot? So we have two mascots, actually. We have orangutan, who we call Uncle Tan.
Mm.
And then we have a rhino, a female rhino, who we call Rin Rin.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah, and basically these two represent a few things, right? One, we are rooted as an Indonesian company. Mm. And these two, orangutan and rhino, are two endangered species from Indonesia.
Yeah.
And so that also kind of shows that as a company, we exist to promote healthy and sustainable food, because the forests where these species live, they are threatened by unsustainable practices of agriculture.
Yeah.
Orangutan and Rin Rin describes our Indonesian root, our mission to really be sustainable and offer sustainable choices for consumers. And yeah, I think those two were the main reasons.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I noticed it was an orangutan, obviously, because coming from Southeast Asia, it's a monkey that people are very familiar with this part of the world, right? But let's talk a little bit more about your product pipeline. I understand that you're set to launch a new product, which is a dairy-free cheese. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you think it's a step too far for cheese lovers, or do you think that cheese lovers will really love it?
I think cheese lovers will really love it, because whenever we launch a new product, we will do a test with 100 participants to try the products. Mm. And this would consist of a mix of, like a mixed type of eaters. We will have the health conscious one, we will have the vegetarian and vegans, but 50% of that will be like general population that just enjoy good food.
Yeah.
Like they like food. The reason why we were very excited about the dairy-free range is, you know, in Indonesia and in Southeast Asia, 80% to 100% of the population is actually lactose intolerant, whether or not they notice this. Mm. So, you know, like dairy was never part of our traditional diet, to be very honest, right? But it has become part of our culinary now. And there are a lot of reasons why people use dairy cheese. It's melt, you know, like it has a melting effect. It gives this creaminess, very rich flavor. It just, I guess, elevates any dish when you put cheese on it.
Yeah.
And when we designed this product, we want the dairy-free cheese to function the way a dairy cheese would. So it has the, you know, like mozzarella pull effect. It melts. You can grate it. You can use it as a pizza topping or a pasta topping. You can also cook it as to make a cheese sauce. So we really wanted the product to be functional. And after, I think, 2 years developing that product, we were able to have that functionality. And so far, all the people who have tried, like I think like only 1% would complain. And the 1% that would complain is because they compare our cheese to like French, very artisanal cheese. But if we talk about general cheese that Southeast Asians consume, it's actually like a lot of people couldn't tell the difference.
Mm, wow, that's amazing. So I'm guessing that you have quite a few food scientists on your team to develop these products, because you're saying that it has to have the same kind of effects that actual like dairy cheese has, right? So who makes up your team actually, and who is responsible for developing these products?
So my co-founder and partner, Max, he's our R&D director. He's pretty much the one leading all the new product development. Mm. And by the way, I cannot cook, even though I run a restaurant and I run a food company, but I cannot cook. So, you know, like Green Rebel is actually a solution for people like me, because we just need to hit it up. So Max has a team of 7, and that consists of a food scientist, a nutritionist, and chefs.
Mm.
So basically, every time we develop a product, we try to balance all those aspects together. You know, like the product has to be functional. That's where the food scientist comes in, right?
Yeah.
And it has to have the right texture and mouthfeel, you know, like cooking time, etc. So that's the food scientist's job. And then we would have a nutritionist team to make sure that the products are healthy,
mm.
right? And by definition of healthy, for according to us, is if it's meat, it has to be high in protein and fiber. It has to have less saturated fat compared to animal meat. And then 0% cholesterol, obviously, because it's 100% plant-based. And when we talk about cheese, it has to have either equal or less saturated fat compared to the dairy cheese, and more fiber, because we want to make something that is healthier, yeah. You know? And then the chefs, they need to make sure that the products are easy to be applied in the kitchen.
Okay, so let's talk about your next goals for Green Rebel and Burgreens then. Is it to expand, or are you focusing on what needs to be done now?
Yes. The answer is yes. So for Burgreens, actually, we are in the process of preparing a franchise business, because we've actually gotten a lot of interest or inquiries from overseas, people who've somehow travel to Indonesia, either in Bali or Jakarta. They like the concept, they love the food, and they wanted to bring that in their own country. So we're preparing that this year. And then for Green Rebel, last year, basically, we were able to replace 150,000 animal-based meals.
Oh my gosh.
Through about 1,200 food service distribution points. So this year, our goal is to triple that number. We want to replace, you know, like close to 500,000 of animal-based meals through about 5,000 distribution points. And in 5 years, we want to hit 10 million meals replacing animal-based meals.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big goal, you know. Yeah. We have pretty ambitious goals. And yeah, at the moment, honestly, what we're focusing is building a great team that can execute the plan. So then we can hit or achieve our mission.
Yeah. What makes you so confident that you will be able to hit those numbers or even set those goals in the first place?
I think as an entrepreneur, sometimes you just have this conviction about something even though you don't have all the data available. I think that's what makes entrepreneurs become entrepreneurs. You know, like even though we don't know all parts of the things, but we just have this conviction that we're going to get there, right? But I also see that it's inevitable, you know, like our natural resources is limited and there is no way we can continue producing animal-based meat to feed the growing population of humans. Like we need alternatives.
Yeah.
And a big part of alternative protein is plant-based meat and dairy. So I think that's like the fact that the earth is not going to have more land. We need to limit our carbon emission. The change to, you know, like a more plant-centric protein system, I think it's inevitable. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your co-founder dynamics. There is obviously a saying where you don't work with friends or family because you never know what will happen. Obviously, in business, people might have different perspectives or different values. But how has it been since working with Max, who's your husband and your business partner?
Right. Yeah. I get this question a lot, and not only by media, but also by investors. Once you find a way to work with your life partner in a business, actually, it's all good. You know, like it's, we get to talk about business at home, and we kind of integrate our life, personal life, with our professional life. Mm-hmm. And it's actually fun to talk about something that you're super passionate about, that you're working on for more than 10 hours a day with your partner, especially if that partner has the same passion, right? It's been awesome. But at the same time, if you don't find that... I guess common grounds on how you can work together, it can be a source of your suffering too. So I think for the first 2 years, it was an adjustment period for us. So we had a lot of fights in the first 2 years because, you know, like we were very different personalities when it comes to work. Like Max is more creative, and he wasn't the planner type at the time. I was very I was such a planner, and then I don't like spontaneous things, so I like having everything prepared, you know? And it was, like, as you can imagine, if these two types of work style combine, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So what we decided to do later, because we knew that we couldn't, like, each of us couldn't change the way we work because it's just part of our personality, we just made a very clear division of work. So he will take care of everything in the kitchen and product. I will take care of everything in the business side.
Mm.
And that has worked really well for us. And then we would also have kind of ground rules. We would have all these professional meetings where we can just function as an organization. But at the same time, and at home, when we do discuss things, it's on a brainstorming mode. So we don't make, you know, like big decisions when we are at home talking about work.
I see.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think that's, you know, like that kind of helps put like fences between our personal and professional life in a way.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, because not a lot of people would want to bring work back to the dinner table, right? As they say. But you guys are okay with that because you're so passionate about what you're doing.
Exactly. And because we have this segregation of duties, actually, even though we're working in the same company, Max and I don't really meet each other every day at work, right?
Yeah.
He would work in the central kitchen in our production facility. I would work from our marketing office.
Mm.
So like whenever we meet at home for dinner, it's like a normal catch-up that you would have with your husband. Like, how is work today? Mm, you know?
I see. So this show is also all about kind of discovering the unexpected stories of people that we may not know about. What do you think people find the most unexpected or surprising about you or your journey?
I think people were shocked when I told them that there was a time during COVID, before we founded Green Gravel, we had a cash reserve that would last us only a week.
Mm, wow.
But yeah, we were able to do something radical about that in a week. But yeah, I think that's pretty surprising for a lot of people.
Mm, okay. And what would be your best advice to people who want to either start their own brand or be their own brand?
I think we need to be comfortable with the fact that we will not, not all people will like us. Like once we put ourselves out there, especially when we build our personal branding on social media, or, you know, like when we do a lot of public talk shows, some people would love you, but some people would hate you.
Oh.
And because it's an online world now, people who hate you might leave like very mean comments, right, on your platform. Just be ready and get comfortable with the fact that some people will not like you for what you are. And that's completely okay. But it's hard to be comfortable with that fact, you know.
Yeah. Have you had a personal experience like that before? That sounds hard.
Yep. Yeah, I was viral on Twitter in Indonesia for 5 days, and it wasn't a good news. So basically, I spoke in a podcast. I spoke in a podcast, and that podcast was about it's a green podcast, so it was about how I discovered my love for plant-based food, and then how I became plant-based, how I started Burgreens and then Green Rebel, and basically what tips could I share for audience that would like to live a more sustainable lifestyle. And nothing in that podcast was basically untrue. So everything that I said in a podcast was basically facts that I would get from, like, you know, United Nations reports, FAO reports. It's all global reports that are available if you search online. But somehow my podcast was cut 10 seconds.
Mm.
And it was about when I talk about how, you know, like the negative environmental aspect of meat production. It was posted by a media that was actually agreeing with my point of view. So they were asking people to reduce meat, you know, as part of, you know, like going green. But they put their own title. They put their own title somewhere around something along the line of, "Is your burger warming the climate?" And it wasn't my words, okay? It was their caption.
Yeah.
But somehow it was then reposted by someone on Twitter that had pretty big following. They thought it was me saying that, and I guess I felt judgmental if someone said that, right? And it got really viral, and basically whatever I said was put out of context, and I got viral for 5 days.
Oh, no.
Okay. And then I learned, you know, like every time I do podcast now, and then before someone wants to take that clip and everything, I have, you know, like a process where they need to request my consent and to always put the source. Because when that clip was taken, that clip didn't even link to the whole podcast. So people who made comments on social media, they never listened to the full podcast.
Yikes, okay. Yeah, that's the problem with social media, right? People extracting certain parts of a whole bit and actually taking it as truth. So what was the gripe with that section that they extracted? And how did you try to tackle your feelings towards being like personally attacked or attacked by the netizens. How did you overcome those feelings? It must have been quite a tough time.
It's really bad. They would take my personal images of me and my dogs, and then they would, you know, like start a new story, making things up. It was pretty crazy. Honestly, I was shocked. So I think I stopped making content for at least a year. But after 2 weeks, so I put my social media account private because I couldn't, you know, like see more random people commenting on my Instagram just to hate me at the time. But then I thought, you know, these people, they don't know me, but they were so ready to make comments about things that they weren't fully understanding, right?
Right.
And then it hit me that actually it shouldn't affect me this much because these people don't know me. And in fact, if I meet them in a in normal life circumstances, I don't think they would be brave enough to even talk to me about this.
Okay. And what personally is a priority for you in your life right now, whether professional or personal?
Personally, my priority is just to learn parenthood as yeah. fast as my baby grows, because it feels like every month he's, you know, growing into this like bigger toddler. And then there are things that I need to learn as a parent to respond, to be able to respond to my baby, you know. So I think that's my priority. And I'm learning to cook also because I'm preparing. My baby's vegetarian, yeah. so I'm preparing all his meals myself. And as a, someone who cannot cook, you know, like it's pretty exciting for me to learn the skill. Professionally, I think I'm focusing on building a strong team that is less and less reliant on me so that we can together, you know, execute and hit that big goal that I just mentioned earlier.
Thank you so much, Helga, for being on Crazy Smart Asia. It's so good to have you here.
Likewise, Chowei, thank you so much for having me.
That's it for yet another episode of Crazy Smart Asia. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us wherever you're listening to this. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Kota and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiao Wei. In the meantime, do remember,
in Indonesia and in Southeast Asia, 80% to 100% of the population is actually lactose intolerant.
See you next week.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.